This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Galactic Wayfarer Sachs. Ethan, we're going to outer space, baby!
To infinity and beyond. Let's go. As people will not be surprised, I mean, some folks even knew ahead of time of us that we were behind our schedule for the podcast.
Yeah, people knew before we did.
The format came at light speed, quite flavorfully, and arrived sooner than we were expecting. So we're shaking things up a little bit here, trying to cram in what we normally do, and we'll do previews now. But don't worry, we will be doing 50 takes. That'll just be coming later on in the week. We're going to be doing our bonus mini podcast. Will not be so mini. We'll be doing 50 takes as our Lord's Unlimited podcast, but we'll be releasing that to the public sphere as well. So you'll have that in your podcast feed and on YouTube later on in the week. But for now, we're going to space, Ben.
Outer space. I am like cautiously optimistic about this one. I don't know. Outer space is not my main theme. I'm a Star Wars guy. I learned before recording that you're a Star Trek man. I would not have thought that about you.
If I have to choose one, I choose Star Wars. But yeah, I watched like all of Next Generation when I was a kid and have rewatched some of it as an adult and have seen like all the movies. So yeah, I guess Star Trek, more Star Trek than not, for sure. Space does, the space stuff does appeal to me, I will say. We had this game when I was a kid. This is a real deep cut. This game when I was a kid called Solar Quest, which is basically Monopoly in space.
Okay.
And you're like orbiting planets and you have to like, instead of getting money, you're getting fuel so you can like keep traveling
and taking over the world, the galaxy.
Yeah. And a lot of the like stationy spacecraft stuff reminds me of the art from that game, that board game. And so I'm like, I get a little nostalgia tripped about it, but it also feels like a little bit like OTJ to me, where it's like, it's magic, but cowboys, it's magic, but space. Like, I'm a little dubious of the flavor of it all, but I'm, as always, excited to talk to you about new mechanics. And these specifically, like two of these mechanics, I'm like, I'm just going to need to get my hands on, but I'm very excited to theory craft about them with you over the next few weeks.
Yeah, there's a lot to discuss in this format, I think, for sure.
Yeah, so let's do a little bit of housekeeping, and then we will dive into chatting about Edge of Eternities. Let's chat about the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show. Of course, the show will always be free, but we have some great perks over at the Patreon that we like to advertise. We already sort of mentioned one of them, which is our podcast feed, where you get access to this episode a day early ad-free, but you'll also get access to our bonus weekly episodes of Lords Unlimited, where anything is on the table, and this week it'll be on the table for everybody, and we'll be doing 52 takes as our episode there. But usually we do some extra draft logs. We did a debrief on Vegas. We're chat about dad stuff, about Ben dropped a nice announcement. Can we give the announcement?
We can give the announcement on the podcast. To the public? Yeah, it's not top secret.
Okay, so Ben, what's your big announcement?
I got engaged about 2 weeks ago now.
Fanfare, boo 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 boo. So exciting. Congratulations. If you want those hot life updates.
Yeah, so I'm sure there'll be wedding planning chat on. on LOL coming up. That is, we've started that process and I am not a fan already.
Oh, I can't wait to just armchair quarterback your wedding planning. So if you want that content, that's on Lords Unlimited. That's via the Patreon. And we've also, for anybody who joins the Patreon, you get access to the Discord new set season, which seems to be all year long. As it were, with Edge of Eternities dropping.
Holy cow, yeah.
In less than 2 months after that, we'll have Spider-Man or whatever it's going to be on Arena, because it won't be Spider-Man on Arena, which is what we will mostly be talking about. But anyway, we have a Discord where we have a great community of like-minded, limited individuals. There were dozens of us talking about the Ravnica Allegiance flashback that I was diving into this week to just scratch my Dovin's Acuity itch, and I got there. But yeah, just the Patreon's awesome. The Discord's awesome. If you want to be part of that community, that's where you go. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Josh, Stefan, A Piece of Pie, Alexander, Lionel, Dave, Daniel, Blair, and Ben. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, we love to see that Ben on there as well as everyone else. And if you're loving the double episodes this week, think about heading on over to the Patreon and checking out the perks over there.
Okay, let's dive into these new mechanics, because this is honestly where I kind of want to spend a bulk of our conversation, because a couple of these mechanics are really tough for me to wrap my head around.
Yeah, so we're going to outer space. We've got to have spacecraft, which is a new artifact subtype that starts out as an artifact. Much like vehicles, it can eventually become an artifact creature permanently. And to do that, these spacecrafts need to be stationed by people. So station is an activated ability that can be activated only as a sorcery. And to station something, you tap an untapped creature you control other than the spacecraft itself. The creature that you tap can be summoning sick, and you put a number of charge counters on the station equal to the creature's power. And then on all these cards, the spacecraft with station, there's going to be a number indicator on the bottom left side of the text box. And once the number of charge counters on the spacecraft equal that number, it becomes a creature with power and toughness, just like you normally would see in the bottom right corner of a card. Not all stations are going to become creatures. Some are just going to gain abilities listed once they come online. But there's a divider in the art on the text box. And you're going to see like, okay, here's what it does as an artifact. And then once it gets station, indicated by the number in the left corner, there's kind of a dividing line where the color changes. It's going to gain all these other abilities and usually become a creature.
So as an example card, so that's a lot of stuff. I think it'll become pretty clear once we talk about a specific card here. We've got Worm Wall Sweeper. It's a 2-mana common artifact spacecraft. When this enters, you surveil 2, and it has station. And once you get 4 counters on it, it's a 2/2 flyer. So it's basically like, it's like crewing, or I guess it's more like saddling, because crewing you could do at instant speed. Saddling was sorcery speed. So it's more like saddling, and you're then just building up rather than having crew 3, you need to accrue, right? A number of power. Anybody? No good?
Horrible.
We'll see what the people think. And you get to the number of counters. So this is like, okay, you got to dump 4 power into this over any number of turns. And once you dump the 4th power into this, it becomes a 2/2 flyer.
But a lot of the stations, I think this is actually kind of a bad example card. This is just the one they had in the mechanics article. But a lot of these station cards have hefty station costs, like 7, 9, 12. So you're going to be saddling over the course of multiple turns before your station comes online, your spacecraft comes online.
I'd like to talk about, we have a handful of spacecrafts to talk about later on in the show notes. I'd like to talk about them a little more upfront, but not before we talk about another mechanic that I think you have to have in conversation with this one, which is warp. So can we talk about warp next?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so warp is a new alternative casting cost for cards. If you pay the warp cost for a card, you'll exile the permanent it becomes at the beginning of the next end step, and then you can cast it from exile on a later turn. So there's a number of different like throwback mechanics you can equate this to, evoke, or it could be like adventure for permanents with ETBs, right? You get the ETB as a spell. You also get the creature in play on your side for a turn, but you can't attack with it. But you get it in play, then it goes to exile, and then you can cast it like normal. So what's an example card we have?
We have Starfield Shepherd, which is a pretty sweet one. It's 3 white white for a 3/2 flying angel at uncommon. and it's got warp for one and a white, so you're going to be able to warp this on turn two. When this creature enters, search your library for a basic planes card or a creature card with mana value one or less, reveal it, put it in your hand, and then shuffle. So turn two, you warp this, you got a three-powered flyer to make, well, you're not going to have a spacecraft out by that point, but the way the mechanics interact is there are some big cards with warp that you're going to be able to warp in for cheap, and then maybe crew up your station up your spacecraft. It's going to be so hard to not call that crewing crewing a spacecraft. Yeah, you're going to station up your spacecraft. I feel like it needs to be a verb. Can station's a noun? Or can station also be a verb?
We're making it one.
We're making it one. Anyway, so you're not going to have that, but that's how those mechanics interact. But on turn two, you're going to get the planes, have it help you hit land drops to ultimately be able to cast this card, just smooth things out for you. So a lot of these warp cards have ETBs like that that are beneficial to you when you warp them, and then you'll get the ETB plus the creature when you actually cast it for its full mana value on a later turn.
I mean, this card, this warp card is just excellent, right? Like, having this in your opener is so good. You get to pay two mana, go find a one drop or a planes, and then later on you get to cast a 5-mana 3/2 flyer that's going to let you do that same thing again. You know, I often think about it, or I was thinking about these cards with your voice in my head when we would talk about flashback cards of like, well, when you cast this, it draws you this thing. There's a blue common called Mechanozoa. It's 4BB for a 5/5. It's an artifact creature. When it enters, you tap target artifact or creature an opponent controls and put a stun counter on it. And it has a warp cost of 2 and a blue. And I was like, oh, why would I ever pay like 3 mana to just stun something at sorcery speed? Well, but it's 3 mana, stun something at sorcery speed, draw this card.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's pretty dang good. I mean, stun something at sorcery speed, not the best, but that's still pretty, like, if you think about, we've had those effects before, and those effects are usually tacked on to just draw a card, and you're drawing more than a card. You're drawing this specific card when you cast it for its warp effect. Plus, we're talking about
5 station power, baby.
Right, so that's the thing that I'm trying to, like, that's why these two mechanics are so tough for me to, like, sort of wrap my brain around. And I guess we should loop in the third mechanic at some point, but I want to talk about these spacecrafts that we have to try and just get a sense of where we're at with these. Because the scuttle, I'll say, in the Lords of Limited Discord, is that these are kind of clunky with a capital C.
I mean, they read that way, but it's impossible without the full picture of the format, I think, to label them as clunky. Like, I just am wary of forming any sort of an opinion about them before we have
you,
the whole...
Hot Takes McGee Wernie doesn't want to make an opinion having seen half the cards in the set?
That's correct. You heard
me. Okay. So let's chat about some of these cards. So the first one up is Debris Field Crusher. It's 4 and a red for a 1/5 uncommon spacecraft. When it enters, it deals 3 damage to any target. So 5 mana, deal 3 sorcery speed. It has station, and once it gets to 8 counters, it's a 1/5 flyer with an activated ability of 1 and a red. It gets +2/+0 until end of turn. So, like, I mean, I just, like, I have no idea how to evaluate this card.
I think you can make a guess at evaluating it. Like,
my guess is this is bad.
Yeah, it doesn't look great to me. 5 mana for 3 damage is overcosted. And then if you're thinking about it as, like, let's say you think about it as 5 mana, 3 damage plus a rectangle. Like, and it's better than a rectangle. It's like a rectangle plus. It's like a potential future creature or something. I don't know. Like, it's like half a card after the 5 mana, 3 damage. It's not great because the card's not great. Like, neither half is particularly exciting, I don't think.
Right. And I think one of the other things that I've been thinking about, like, I feel like people are seeing, like, the 8 cost. And 8 is, like, pretty hefty. But if it's even something in the 5 or 6 range, I've been talking to people and they've been like, are you really going to, like, you want to tap, like, you're going to miss out on 2 or 3 attacks with creatures instead of, you know, to station this? And my thought is that station is more likely going to be in one-shot bursts. Like, you're going to, like, land your 6-drop, dump, like, tap that thing, and now your spacecraft is online. And it might even be then a chain effect because the spacecrafts are big and then that spacecraft gets to station another spacecraft, etc. This doesn't even let you do that because it's 1 power once you dump all 8 power into it. So I'm not a fan.
Sure. Like, I kind of think about, at least right now, for me, like, I'm thinking about, you're going to want one spacecraft right. running around, at least, probably, as, like, a power sink or whatever. Like, as we would think about mana sinks or something, like a place to, when you warp, like, this is another thing that goes well with warp, and you're going to be able to put your warp power to use. So, like, it's hard for me to think, well, spacecraft are bad. We're not going to want any spacecraft. I'm cautious about, like, the number and quality of spacecraft I want. But I think one sounds very good to me to have onto the battlefield, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something to be able to dump power into. What's the next one we got on this list?
Fel Grav Ship, which is 2 and a black for a 3/2 uncommon spacecraft. When it enters, you mill 3 cards and return a creature or spacecraft from your graveyard to your hand. It's got station. Once it hits 8 counters, it turns into a 3/2 flying lifelink.
This one I'm kind of into. This feels like one that I'd be like, yeah, this could be my one or one of my two in my deck. Like, 3 mana, little, there's, you know, there's going to be some, I'm sure, black-green is graveyard stuff. Like, there'll be some self-mill synergy. Mill 3, grab something is nice. And then 3 mana, 3/2 flying lifelink is, I mean, or I should not call it 3 mana, 3/2 flying lifelink. I should just say 3/2 flying lifelink, because it'll be many turns down the road that this turns into a creature. But once it does, that's a real creature.
Yeah. And I think, like, so to compare, like, if you're talking about how to evaluate these and comp these to cards, I imagine this will play out similarly good to, like, the card from Aether Drift.
It was Carrion Crusher.
Whatever. Like, the 3/2 vehicle that milled 2 and brought 1 back. Like, that card was fine. Yeah. Like, I imagine this will be playable, like, playable plus in the right deck.
Yeah. Next up, we have Galvanizing Sawship, which is 5 and a red for an artifact spacecraft. Full stop. No ETB on this card. But once you've dumped 3 power into it, once you've stationed it with 3 power, it's a 6/5 flying haste. These are very good, right?
Different cards. Yeah, they're different cards. So I think the lower the station cost, the more you care about what the actual card is, and the higher the station cost, the more you're caring about what the ETB effect is of the artifact. I think the fact that this having no ETB is kind of a dead giveaway, that you're supposed to cast this, station it up, and hit your opponent for 6 in the air, which seems super doable to me. I mean, a 6/5, if you thought about this as a 6 mana, 6/5 flying haste crew 3 vehicle, mm-hmm. are you into that? Had to crew once? It's real good.
That seems good.
It's like that card. It's, again, like that card from Aether Drift. There was the vehicle that you could only crew once, right? If you had the right type of thing that you told me was terrible that I liked.
That didn't have flying. I did tell you that was terrible. That's often my bit, is me trying to tell you cards are terrible.
I'm sure everyone knows exactly what card we're talking about, but
I do. We'll have it in YouTube, maybe.
But this is better than that. Yeah?
Yes. Right, you got to like tap any number.
Of the three, this is the one that excites me the most, but this is also the one that's least like a spacecraft because it's easy to station.
Right. Yeah, so speaking of cards that are most like spacecraft, we have Specimen Freighter. It's 5 and a blue for a spacecraft. When it enters, return up to 2 target non-spacecraft creatures to their owner's hand. So 6 mana, bounce 2 things, sorcery speed. And then when you've stationed it with 9 power... it's a 4/7 flyer. When it attacks, defending player mills 4 cards.
I love this one.
Do you just love double bounce spells? Is that
I love double bounce spells. I'm almost willing to pay 6 mana for a double bounce spell. Like, probably 5 just straight up for that effect. And the 1 more mana to get this as a vehicle sink or a station sink. I really like this, like, chilling on the battlefield. Like, it's an impressive card when it comes online. Much more than the red one, like, where you're gonna have to invest mana. Like, this is gonna play offense, defense. 4/7 is huge.
It is huge. I agree. Yeah.
It's gonna give you the time to get it online because you're gonna bounce the thing. Like, it plays well with itself in that way. Because one of the problems with stationing is that then you're gonna leave yourself vulnerable to attacks, like, because you're going to be tapping what could have been blockers to be stationing up your stuff. And blue also looks like it really wants to do the warp thing. Like, blue's got, at least so far, we've got a lot of good blue warp cards previewed. I'm very into Specimen Freighter.
Right. I mean, it's tough because you won't have it in play at that point, but, like, you know, if you think about, you play this, I mean, there's a real blue tempo stuff happening here with like, I mean, it's defensive tempo, but it's still tempo with like this in play on six, the following turn, maybe you double spell and you, and one of your double spells is warping out that five,
the Mechanozoa. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then dump five into it. The following turn, you cast the Mechanozoa, dump five more. Now the 4/7 flyer's online.
Yeah.
So
I'm here for that for sure.
So hard to evaluate, though. I have no idea. It, like, my default is to think that like these mechanics must be successful to some extent. Like, they're not going to make station as a limited mechanic that's going to fall flat, I would think.
I agree. I'm trusting that it's going to work in some capacity. And of the ones, I like Specimen Freighter the best.
Yeah. Okay. And then last on this list, what do we have?
Rescue Skiff. This is 5 and a white for an uncommon 5/6. When it enters, return target creature or enchantment card from your graveyard to the battlefield, and it's got a hefty 10 plus station cost. So to turn into a 5/6 flyer.
Yeah, which is no slouch.
But again, this is only like one more mana than you would pay for this effect normally, if you're talking about wanting to have a station sink on the battlefield.
Yeah, like a little bit of a premium on a zombify reanimate effect, or I guess just from your graveyard. But And then theoretically, whatever you return, if you want to, it's going to be a big fatty boom boom, and that can dump its power into the Rescue Skiff and get you maybe halfway there or whatever.
It does feel very feast or famine as a mechanic, sort of, that like once you get the station online, your opponent's going to be in some trouble.
Yeah. Well, and also like your opponent, it's tough because you sort of see it coming. And so if I have a kill spell, if I have a, you know, whatever, Doomblade, whatever it is, murder in the format, and I see you like dumping five power into your 10 station thing, I go, cool. So next turn, I'm just going to hold up my removal. And once you've tempoed yourself into oblivion, I'll kill your spacecraft.
But if there's like the other nice thing about it, if there's like a hexproof spell, you're not going to be having, it'll be so trivial easy to hold up a hexproof spell to protect them because you don't have to dump mana into them when they're coming online, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so we've got Station, we've got Warp, they play together. There's a third mechanic that also plays in the space with Warp, and that's Void, it's basically like Revolt, but on both sides of the battlefield.
Yeah, so Void is a new ability word that improves what a card's going to do if a non-land permanent left the battlefield this turn, or if a spell was warped this turn. But notably, it doesn't care about whose stuff left the battlefield or whose stuff was warped. Just like anything goes as far as that goes. So first card we've got is Tragic Trajectory, which is black for a sorcery. Target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. If you have Void online, that creature gets -10/-10 until end of turn instead, if a non-land permanent left the battlefield this turn or a spell was warped this turn.
So I'm like in my head out, sort of, on sorceries, on the one mana sorcery speed -2/-2s, because they don't let you, we've been burned on these before, they don't let you take the play back like shock does, right? So if you're on the draw and your opponent goes land, you go land, your opponent goes land number two, they play a two drop, you can shock their two drop and you've basically stolen the play back from them. Tragic Trajectory doesn't let you do that, but sorcery speed, one mana, kill anything if Void is triggered, is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, Tragic Trajectory is incredible.
Yeah, that's a good card. The other one we have on this...
It's an insanely good card.
It's not insanely good. It's good.
It's like a B+. A B?
B, yeah.
B is as low as I will go.
The other card on this list is Insatiable Skittermaw. It's 2 and a black for a 2/2 with Menace. And its Void trigger is at the beginning of your end step, if Void happened, you put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. We've seen these variations before. They're usually on 3 mana 2/3s that grow. Like we definitely saw this in, I think it was Brothers War, and I think another set more recently than that. But these 2/3s, like if something died, basically, you put a counter on it. Void, a little easier to trigger than if something died, because it's just if a non-land permanent left the battlefield on either side this turn. Or if something was warped, which you might be doing. But also, this on a body with Menace is no joke.
This seems really good to me as far as these type of cards go. Like, I woke up this morning and I was thinking about this card while I was getting ready for the podcast.
Whoa, this card?
I think this is not a premium card, whatever, I don't think. But I think it's got a lot of potential. Like, usually this is a write-off kind of card design slot. But it's going to be so easy to trade two drops. And this is going to come down as a 3-3 menace or whatever. I just don't see the thing die.
Right.
They don't normally know. That style of card, you have to have it on the battlefield.
Well, and that's the other thing. So I was equating this to Revolt, but it's also going to have a sort of raid-like effect on combat. And raid was a mechanic that cared about if, like, creatures had ETBs with raid, and it was like, if you attacked this turn, you get this bonus. And so there would be this sort of like cat and mouse bluffing game in combat when your opponent made maybe what looked like bad attacks. You'd go, are they trying to trigger raid? Like, can I eat their 2-2 with my 3-3? Or do they have a combat trick and I'm going to get blown out if I block? And so you have this sort of push-pull that Void also does. So you're right. Like, if I attack my thing into your thing and you're like, well, do I actually want to take this trade and grow a Skittermaw that you're going to potentially drop? Maybe I do, maybe I don't. It's an interesting sort of twist that it'll put on combat.
Yes, I like it.
Okay, what else do we got? We glossed over Planet, which is a new non-basic land type that all have a station to gain extra abilities listed in the bottom portion of the text box. So for example, we have Uthros, Titanic God Core. This is a mythic planet. I don't think any of these are at non-rare. This land enters tapped. It taps for blue. And once you've stationed it with 12 power, you can pay blue tap to add blue for each artifact you control.
LSV Vintage Cube videos rejoice. There's now a second Talarian Academy for him to force.
How are you dumping 12 power into this in your Talarian Academy decks?
He'll figure it out. He'll get some construct tokens.
Constructs help you in that respect. Yeah.
Details like that will not stop that man from forcing artifacts.
That's fair.
these are sick. Like, just from a nostalgia perspective, like, these lands hit big time for me, just as like a cool design, and also how absurdly broken the original designs of the lands were. Like, you have to get 12 plus power for this to be usable now. Is tickling to me.
It's also kind of silly to me that Uthros, Titanic God Core, a mythic land, is not legendary.
That's the other thing I was thinking about. I was reading through your, where this a teaser for Lords Unlimited. I was reading through your What Grinds My Gears segment of Lords Unlimited.
Yeah.
And what grinds my gears is I think there should be a rule that all legendaries need to have like a name, title of what I do, like Ben, yes, Destroyer of Worlds or whatever. Like, they all need to read like that, because I legend ruled myself again.
with
Ignis Scientia, because it doesn't have like a land, it doesn't have a name, do the thing type name, and it's just a 2-2 that ramps you. Why is that card legendary?
Yeah. Yes, I agree with the legendary templating. I think when it skews from blank, the blank or whatever, it's a little tougher to grok. The last mechanic that we have to shout out is, there is a new rectangle in town.
New rectangle in town, indeed. It's a good one. So Lander Tokens is a new type of artifact token. It's an artifact token that costs 2 mana to activate, and you sacrifice it to search your library for a basic land card and not into your hand. On the battlefield.
It's rampant growth. The token is rampant growth.
That's absurd.
So the example card here is Galactic Wayfarer. It's 2 and a green for a 3-3 common. When this enters, create a Lander token, which just seems like top common alert. Not like not necessarily like for the whole set, but top green common alert for sure.
Yeah, that card seems extraordinarily powerful to me.
Yeah, I mean, so the Lander tokens are also really interesting, because it makes it seem like the format is slower. If people are cracking this, we're also going to get to a color pair slash a mechanic or a check for the number of differently named lands you have, which the lander tokens make me think, I'm like, are we just going to be running like, am I going to be playing a blue-green deck and just running like swamp, plains, mountain for funsies to trigger my differently named lands life? And I think the answer might be yes.
I hope so, so much.
So yeah, these lander tokens are very, very interesting. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now one of the top causes of declining mental health. I recently started another job, and balancing that, plus the podcast, plus family life, has been a challenge.
It's here, Ethan. Summer is officially over. We start half days next week, and then full days the following week for band camp. And then I'll have more free time in about June. 3 months. Yeah, next June, yeah.
Next June, you'll have more free time. To battle stress, most of us can't wave goodbye to work. Ben is waving hello to work. But we can start small with a focus on wellness, like hitting the gym, getting a good night's sleep, or having a vacation to look forward to.
A holiday's great, but it isn't a long-term solution to stress. Don't forget that therapy can help you navigate whatever challenges the workday or any day might bring.
I've been seeing a therapist for over a year now, and I always feel more centered and focused at the end of our time together.
BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching people with the right therapist from their diverse network of more than 30,000 licensed therapists with a wide range of specialties.
As the largest online provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise.
Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/lords. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show.
All right, let's get into the handful of signpost uncommons that have been previewed so far. First up, we have blue-black. And I got to say, so we have, what, 7 of these so far? 7 of the 10? And it looks like we don't have doubles this time around. These look almost unanimously excellent to me.
I agree. They're powerful.
So the first up is the blue-black one. And this is Alpharail, Dreaming Acolyte. It's 1 blue-black for a 2/3 legendary. See how we knew it was legendary? Because it was name, comma, what the guy does, you know? So I'm just saying. Okay, so when Alpharail enters, draw 2 cards, then discard 2 cards, unless you discard an artifact card. And during your turn, Alpharail has Death Touch.
I mean, what's not to like? It seems like there are a lot of artifacts already that we've seen so far. So I would assume, safe to say, I think that blue-black is probably going to have some sort of artifact sub-theme.
I mean, just draw 2, discard 2. 3-mana, 2/3, draw 2, discard 2 is great.
And yeah, the fact and, that you and get, potentially be up a card if you want to be.
Mm-hmm. And then Death Touch on attacks is awesome. Yeah, I really like this card. So points to blue-black being artifacts. I don't think we've seen, have we seen the article yet that says like what the color pairs are doing?
I digged around a little bit. I didn't find it, no.
Yeah, so we're guessing artifacts here.
Red-black, potentially void, is up next. So we've got Interceptor Mechan. This is 2 black-red for a 2/2 uncommon robot. It's got flying. Whenever it enters, return target artifact or creature card from your graveyard to your hand. And it has void at the beginning of your end step if a non-land permanent left the battlefield this turn, or if a spell was warped this turn, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature.
So this is Gravedigger with flying, with types, that grows.
Sign me up, baby.
This just looks excellent again. Next up is Red Green Landfall, which I would normally be dubious of, but the lander tokens make that like way more interesting. Here we've got Tanuk Memorial Ensign, 1 red green for a 2/4, and as landfall, it deals a damage to each opponent. If this is the second time this ability has resolved this turn, draw a card.
It's a land drop plus a lander token. Easy peasy, draw card. Keep that gas flowing. Hit those land drops.
I mean, that's got like Tatyova vibes to me a little bit.
And it only costs 3 mana, has 4 toughness. That card is sturdy.
Sturdy is a great, great adjective for that card.
Yeah, that one looks very good to me as well. Next up, we've got white black, maybe potentially go wide. This is Servandum the Lucent. 2 white, black, black, uncommon, 4/4. Not an angel, folks. I looked forever for flying on this card before I realized it was a knight. It's a human knight. Death Touch and lifelink. And whenever it enters or attacks, other creatures you control get +1/+0 and gain Death Touch until end of turn.
I will say this is the one I'm least excited about right now, but that's mostly just because I haven't seen it. Like I don't have the full like scope of what it does. Plus it's a 5-drop, which I like a little less, but I mean, if Go Wide is supported, adding +1/+0 and Death Touch to all of your tokens is nothing. It's like really hard to interact with.
Yes.
Yeah. For red white, it looks like it's, I mean, I'm sure it's aggro, but it does look like it's trying to do the like station spacecraft thing based on this
which
card.
Which is completely at odds with aggro, right?
Like, yeah, right. That is a little weird.
The derpiest way to try to be aggro.
Well, but you can also, I mean, as we'll see with this card, you can also just trigger it the old fashioned way by turning him sideways. This is Sammy, Ship's Engineer. It's 2 red-white for a 2/4. At the beginning of your end step, if you control 2 or more tapped creatures, create a tapped 2/2 colorless robot artifact creature token. And notably, this could be one of the two tapped things. So you attack with something and you've got a, or maybe you've just got a spacecraft you're trying to station up and you've got one other creature, you play this, tap both of those, you get a tapped robot, and then your opponent is free and clear to smash in with whatever they have because you've tapped down your whole board. So not sure about that, but I'm intrigued by this card.
I'm a little lower on that one, too, I think.
Yeah. I guess 4-mana 2/4 is a little weird. It's interesting. That's a whole... Yeah, station is so hard for me to evaluate.
Next up, we've got blue-green, which is looking to be land or token ramp. We've got Biomechan Engineer. This is blue-green for a 2/2 uncommon. When this enters, create a land or token. And it has a mana sink on it as well. 8 mana to draw 2 cards and create a 2/2 colorless robot artifact creature token. Shout out to Blue Green, baby.
That's all. I was going to say, I have one sentence, one thing to say to you. Shout out to Blue Green. My God. 2 mana, 2/2, make a lander. And then if this sticks around, it's just like river hoopoo. Like it's just insane amounts of value.
Yeah, I love Biomechan Engineer. That one looks incredibly pushed. That one looks the best of the bunch to me.
Yes, I agree with that.
Also exciting that like the two most powerful just in a vacuum are, I think, the red-green and the blue-green.
The lander token ones.
The lander token ones, yeah. And then the red-black ones, also nuts.
I also think the black green one is excellent. This is Seed Ship Brood Tender. It's black green for a 2/3. When it enters, mill 3 cards, and you can pay 3 black-green at sorcery speed. Sacrifice this, return target creature or spacecraft card from your graveyard to the battlefield. This has real, like the one from Aetherdrift, the artifact that was black green in your upkeep, surveil 1, and you could pay 4 to crack it to reanimate something. This is like that. You don't get the surveil, you get the mill 3 up front, though, and it's a 2-mana 2/3. I think this card's really good.
That one's good. Yeah, I agree. That one, again, like liking that in the mix, I think I'd put that in 4th of the ones that we've seen so far if I were ranking them. You know I love a good ranking before the whole format's out.
I can't tell. You don't want to have hot takes. You do want to rank 7 of the 10 signposts, so... Oh,
I feel like signposts where we've had... We've had a similar-ish effect from the signpost for the last 10 years or whatever. That's true. I feel a little more confident at ranking those than I do a new mechanic and a new card type that we've never had a chance to play with that is difficult to evaluate.
That's fair.
All right, that takes us on to an early look at some removal. We've got Banishing Light is back, 2 and a white for the O-ring effect. Comes down, exile something until Banishing Light leaves the battlefield.
Let me ask you this. Are you going to come in pretty cool on this effect and then 2 weeks in admit that it's the best white common, or what's your journey going to be with this?
I think I'm coming in cool and staying cool is going to be the journey. Like this looks how? Like there's
how is this what you do? for folks not steeped in Lords of Limited lore, Ben just always hates the Banishing Light Oblivion Ring variant. It, mostly because he's always like, but in this format, there's a lot of enchantment.
That's what I was just getting ready to say. It's like there's ways to punish the spacecraft. Why the spacecraft need punishing, I'm not sure.
Did the existence of Suplex make white Aurasite bad?
17 lands says no.
But I'm not asking 17 lands. I'm asking Ben Wernie.
No, white Aurasite was good.
Yeah, all right.
There was a bit of a like... Fingers crossed sure. Sometimes.
Sure. There was a bit of a fingers crossed. Next, we have Embrace Oblivion. This is the Bone Splinters variant of the format. Single black sorcery. Has an additional cost to cast the spell, sack an artifact or creature, destroy target creature or spacecraft. And notably, this triggers void for you as well.
Well, and yeah, going to trigger void just because it's blowing something up, yeah. Regardless. Like, it's not because of the sacrifice text, but the fact that it is one mana, I think, is real with void. Like, if you've never played with Morbid was a mechanic that cared about if a permanent left the battlefield or died before you cast your thing. And it was really hard to trigger. Like, a lot of the creatures had cool Morbid ETBs. Like, I'm thinking of Morcrypt Banshee, which we were all salivating over. It was 3 black for a 4/4. And when it ETB'd, if Revolt had happened, something got -4/-4. It was really hard to trigger because it was hard to get something to die before you cast the thing. And so a one mana way like this, it does look like, despite void, you know, happening on either person's turn when something leaves, like, a lot of the cards seem to be sorceries or creatures that care about at the end of your end step, did this thing happen? So I could see this being a cool enabler.
You also get to interact with your warp cards in a way. Like, if you warp something in, it has an ETB, you get that value. But then you're like, I'm not going to like cast the 6-drop anytime soon. You could sack it to Embrace Oblivion instead of letting it go off to exile.
Next up, we've got Gravkill. 3 and a black, instant, exile target creature or spacecraft, clean, bingo, bango, bongo. That card's going to be good.
Yeah. Plasma Bolt is a single red for a sorcery. Again, the red deal 2 is sorcery speed, so you're not stealing the playback with this either. But it does have void that it deals 3 damage instead if a non-land permanent left the battlefield this turn or a spell was warped. So this is a void payoff, because if you void, then this deals 3. Or it's an enabler, because it's going to kill something and then trigger void.
You can also go face. This card's incredible.
Incredible. Banishing Light is your cool, and Plasma Bolt is incredible.
You're correct. You heard me. That's the take.
I'm just need to write all these down for now.
Are we gonna have a game in hand win rate bet on Plasma Bolt versus Banishing Light? We did this before it's unlimited.
I don't know. I'm not ready to place bets yet. I'm not placing any bets yet. And then lastly, we've got it hasn't been previewed in English yet, but we're going off of Mythic spoilers. Cut the Fuel Line. Just 2 and a red for an instant. Target creature deals damage to itself equal to its power. If that creature has flying, it deals twice that much damage to itself instead. Not great, Bob. I don't
love this, yeah.
But I guess the joke about the flying thing is that, or the Cut the Fuel Line, is that all the spacecrafts have flying, right? So every sort of like you get to make sure you kill a thing if it's been stationed up.
But not that 1/5 in red.
It's
gonna be dealing two to itself. It's gonna be dodging.
Wow, maybe that card's OP. Dodges Cut the Fuel Line. Okay.
All right, that takes us on to some warp cards. We've got Starbreach Whale here, which is 4 and a blue for a 3/5 common whale with flying. When it enters, you surveil 2, and its warp cost is 1 and a blue.
So, I mean, it's like kind of like Dreams of Laguna, right? 2 mana, surveil 2, draw this card. Is what this is when you warp it.
No.
Yes.
Dreams of Laguna, you were ultimately up a card at the end of everything. You're not up a card at the end of this.
You mean once you flashed it back?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just mean that, like, up front, like, when I see this, I'm like, 2 mana, surveil 2. But it's 2 mana, surveil 2, draw a card.
Sure. I don't think about this one that way. Like, I don't know why. Like, the Mechanozoa one, that one checked out with me the way that you're evaluating it. This one is just like 4 mana, 3/5 flyer. You have the warp buyout clause. Like, I think when you're like, surveil 2, draw this card, like, it sounds way better than I think the card is. I feel like you're like a used car salesman trying to get me to like Starbreach Whale or something.
I think you should like Starbreach Whale. I think this will be a good card. I think because I just think time and time again, we have seen that cheap hand smoothing card selection effects are good and limited. Like, Resentful Revelation was excellent, and like Carrot Cake, like whatever, these like cheap ways to sort of manipulate the top of your library. And the fact that this then, whatever, like as a top deck is also then just, you can play it as a 5 mana 3/5, but then you're still like, I'm just trying to say draw a card after this, because I mean, that literally is what you're getting to do when you warp it. Plus you're getting 3 power on the battlefield. And yes. if you buy it today, I will knock another 25% off the cost.
Can we have a deal? How can I say no? I just between Mechanozoa, which was the 5/5 stun something, and this, I like Mechanozoa significantly better.
I'd take that bet right now. I would take the bet that Starbreach Whale has a higher game in hand win rate than Mechanozoa.
Really?
I would, yeah.
All right, I'm in. Let's do it.
Okay, we're making bets. It's happening. Okay, and I assume you want bite sorted by top players.
Yes, always. Always.
Next up is Broodguard Elite. X green for a 0/0. It enters with X +1/+1 counters on it. When this creature leaves the battlefield, put its counters on target creature you control, and it has a warp cost for X and a green.
This is a lot of power and toughness over two turns, potentially late in the game, but none of it seems particularly good to me.
It's extremely overcosted. And the thing I really don't like about it is even when you warp it, it doesn't enable attacks the turn you warp it, because you have to wait till end step for this to exile to get the counters on a thing. I'm out on this card. I think this card does not look good to me.
Yeah, it seems worse than both the blue cards.
Yes, I agree.
It's because it's colored green, you know? It just knocks it down a whole letter grade.
If someone told us it was X black black, we'd both be like, oh, whoa. What a card.
All Fate Stalker is up next. This is 3 and a white for a 2/3. When this creature enters, exile up to one target non-assassin creature until this creature leaves the battlefield. And it's got warp for 1 and a white.
So do you see what you get to do with this?
That you get to scam other warp cards with this?
Your own warp cards, yeah. So scam, so you play, you warp in. There's a 9 mana 9/9 with warp 3 that we'll talk about later. So on turn 5 mana, you warp in your 9/9, warp this in, flicker your 9/9. Boom, scammed.
Sure, and or just like presumably if you're playing warp cards, and maybe we don't have the blue-white one yet. Is blue-white going to be warp like blink? That would be
sick. It looks like it might be.
That would be. I'm here for that. But this is also just going to re-trigger your ETBs on your good warp cards. This All Fate Stalker looks outstanding to me.
Yeah, the fact that you get like the both halves of it, of like, okay, I'll warp it to flicker this thing, and then when I actually cast it, then I'm going to exile one of your things. Takes us to some Void Enablers and Payoffs. A lot of scuttle about this card. Umbral Collar Zealot is 1 and a black for a 3/2. It's an uncommon. And just straight up sack outlet. Sack another creature or artifact. Surveil 1. So just a free Void Enabler. Plus just like, Surveil 1 is no joke. Black-green's going to care about graveyard stuff. This card just looks great to me.
It's just a very solid card. It's like a classic B-minus, B. Like, just never going to be bad. It's not going to be the type of card that outright wins you the game or something like that. But it's a very powerful card.
Yeah.
Next up, we've got Void Forged Titan. This is 4 and a black for an uncommon 5/4. It's an artifact creature robot warrior, and it's got void at the beginning of your end step. If a non-land permanent left the battlefield this turn, or if a spell was warped this turn, you draw a card and lose a life.
Like, and this is another one where, like, if the turn, whatever, void happens in combat, post-combat you play this, you're already up a card, draw a card, lose a life, and then they have to deal with this on, like, pretty soon, because on subsequent turns you're going to get to do this. Oh, I just realized that lander tokens trigger void.
Yeah.
Oh, baby. And speaking of, let's chat about some lander token cards. Just a couple. There's Kav Landseeker. It's 3 and a red for a 4/3 with menace. When this creature enters, you create a lander token. At the beginning of the end step on your next turn, sacrifice that token. So if you want to crack it, you have a 1-turn window to do so, which I will gladly do.
Yeah, I was very confused about lander tokens because this was the first lander token card I read. And I was like, what is happening? Do they all do this? When I sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step, do I get to get the land for free? But no, it's what you said. It's that there's like a ticking timer on like, hey, you gotta fire this thing off or it's going to go away. This one is certainly less good than the green one, costing 4 mana.
Sure. But for, I mean, for, yeah, it's costing 4 mana for sure. 4/3 menace is still a pretty dang good body.
Yeah, like impossible to say, but right now, like my guess is that this is closer to filler than not. Is that, you think that's the wrong instinct?
No, I think that's right, just because it's a 4-drop. Because like you're right that ideally on turn 5, I would like to not be cracking a lander token and playing a 3-drop.
Right, and you're locked into that play pattern. Like if you don't have a good 2 or 3-drop, or you just played a 4-mana, 4/3 menace, like this one's got a lot more restrictions on it.
I agree. Closer to filler than not is fair.
Lastly here, we've got Sammy's Curiosity. This is green for a sorcery. You gain 2 life, create a lander token. I haven't seen this card. Holy cow.
It's like a Tune with Aether, right? Isn't this nuts?
It is very good, right?
I think so.
Or is it, it's just rampant growth. Is it not that good?
Well, yeah, it's not, or it's better than rampant growth, I would think. I mean, I guess it's a 3-mana rampant growth, except gaining 2 life is not nothing. And having the rectangle is not nothing. Like having rampant growth is so sorcery speed. This, you can do it instant speed. This, you can do when you want to. I don't know. I'm kind of into this card. You think no?
Yeah, but it's not like broken or anything. Like Galactic Wayfarer is better than Sammy's Curiosity quite a bit. Yeah,
that's the 3-drop.
Yep.
That makes a lander token. Better than it by quite a bit. Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
So all these lander tokens running around, you're grabbing your basic lands so that you can have 5 differently named lands for these cards. So let's get into those. We've got All Faith Scroll. It's a 3-mana artifact. Tapped, add 1 mana of any color. It is the year of the Manalith. Are we back? This also has 7-mana tap. Sacrifice this artifact. Draw X cards, where X is the number of differently named lands you control.
I mean, seems great for me. A lot of the cards also reduce costs by the amount of differently named lands you control. This one doesn't, but presumably if you've got the lander tokens, you're going to be able to get there on All Faith Scroll. Mm-hmm. I think what I really hope is that there's some uncommon planets, like, or just planets sprinkled throughout, because it is going to be tough if there's only basic lands plus that one common land as far as differently named lands and then rare and mythics.
Right, we should talk about this. So this is the first set in a long time where there is not a dedicated land slot. Like we had towns in the last set. We've had like a dual land type in a lot of the most recent sets. This will not have those. These will effectively be 13 card packs. And the bonus sheet is all lands, but the bonus sheet is going to appear quite infrequently. It's basically going to be one bonus sheet card in about 8 booster packs. So you'll see like 3 of those per draft, which is pretty rare. Cause that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, are we going to be getting a lot of the bonus sheet lands as our extra land types? But that's not really going to be the case. So you're right. Like it is going to be, I think mostly you're going to be doing it with basics in terms of the differently named lands. But when you get to do it with, you know, you mentioned the common sort of like Evolving Wilds variant, comes into play tapped, you pick a color and taps for that color.
Yeah, we should just say what that card is. It's Command Bridge is its name in this format. It's a land, it enters tapped, and when it enters, you have to sacrifice it unless you tap an untapped permanent you control.
Okay.
And it taps to add 1 mana of any color.
Gotcha. Oh, so it's so taps for any color, but it's got that like Gateway Plaza kind of deal to it.
Yes, but you could also tap a creature. You don't necessarily have to pair one. You could tap a land, tap a creature, tap a lander token.
Lander token. There you go. Yeah. Next, speaking of those cost reduction ones, we've got Fungal Colossus. It's 6 and a green for a 5/5. It costs X less to cast, where X is the number of differently named lands you control. So could get this down to a single green. Could this be like Talarian Terror of this format?
I really wanted to put this on Greater Garbage, but I felt like we had to do it here. I want to go great on this card if we're going Greater Garbage.
I mean, you could sign me up. Do you think like Talarian Terror, this is 6 and a blue for a 5/5 with Ward 2, and it costs 1 less to cast for each instant sorcery in your graveyard? That, do you think this is going to be like, This has potential to be like top common level of good like that?
No, probably not.
Okay. But it's definitely something to chase after.
Yes, that is true. Next up, we've got Survey Mechan. This is 4 mana for a 1/3 uncommon robot with flying and hexproof. It's got 10 mana as a cost and sacrificing the creature. Deals 3 damage to any target. Target player draws 3 cards and gains 3 life. This ability costs X less to activate, where X is the number of differently named lands you control. This is sick.
I had put this on Greater Garbage this morning until I saw that you had put this in here as well. Is this good? This can't be good.
This is great.
How can this be great?
You don't think so?
I'm just so like, okay, 4 mana, 1/3 flying hexproof is abysmal.
It's hexproof.
It's abysmal. It's hexproof. What do I need to do? I could sneeze across the table from it and it will die. Like, sure, it's hexproof. I'm not trying to kill this thing. And it can't engage in combat at all. It can't station anything well. And so then I'm hoping to get this to, I'm doing a bunch, jumping through a bunch of hoops in my deck to pay 5, deal 3, draw 3, gain 3.
Yeah, you're going to curve out on 4 with this and then activate it on 5 and win the game. Easy peasy.
Cruel ultimatum, my opponent with the Survey Mechan. I mean, it's so funny. This is like the exact kind of card that I'm going to like talk down on the podcast and then post trophy decks with.
And I'm never going to play.
No, I don't know. I think you're interested enough in it. But
I'm interested.
But I'm very skeptical of this card.
I think that one's good.
Okay. A couple of build rounds to shout out that we've seen so far. Hopefully we get some more. We've got Eusocial Engineering. It's 3 green for an enchantment. It's got landfall. Whenever a land you control enters, you make a 2/2 colorless robot artifact creature token. Hello, Chocobo Racetrack. But it's also got warp for 1 and a green. So in theory, you get to do this on turn 3 and hit your land drop to get your 2/2.
That's not a super strong turn 3 play, though.
It's not. I'm not crazy about this. Though, lander tokens do make it more exciting.
The fact that you can pretty consistently get 2 for a turn for a while, maybe. I don't know. Jury's out for me on that one. I think probably not that powerful, be my guess.
Yeah.
And then Tapestry Warden's another one. 3 and a green for an uncommon 3/4 artifact creature robot soldier with vigilance. And each creature you control assigns like combat damage equal to toughness. And each creature you control powers up stations with its toughness rather than its power.
Okay, so this with my Survey Mechan, now my Survey Mechan's basically a 3/3 flying hexproof.
Yeah, it's great.
Now that's what's up. I mean, I always love a toughness matters build around, so I'm in for Tapestry Warden.
Yeah, we'll have to see what else goes along with it, but I assume if it's here, there's going to be some other stuff. That red 1/5 spacecraft.
That's not too shabby.
Not too shabby, yeah.
All right, that brings us to everyone's favorite segment, certainly mine, Great or Garbage, where the rules are pretty clear. We're going to go through a list of cards, and we have to come out on the side of, is it great or is it garbage? What do we got?
No in between.
No in between. No. Yeah, you got to make your stand.
All right, first up, we've got Terra Pact Intimidator. This is 1 and a red for an uncommon 2/1. When it enters, target opponent may have you create 2 lander tokens. If they don't, you put 2 +1/+1 counters on this creature.
Great.
It's a Punisher effect, though.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't. I mean, like, what's the situation? I guess that we, I mean, what more do you want from a 2-mana 2/1?
I agree. This card's excellent. But I think people are going to be like, Punisher effect. Like, both halves of this Punisher effect are awesome. And when you're drawing your 2-drop on turn 8 anyway, like, you're not expecting it to be bustedly relevant.
Right. So it's either going to be a 4/3 or it's going to come with 2 lander tokens. It's probably going to be a 4/3. But even, like, honestly, it sounds better to me on turn 8. Because I'm like, well, then I have the mana to crack the lander token. So I guess you're giving me a 4/3, which I'm not mad about. And I have no idea what are you supposed to do when your opponent plays this on 2?
You have to deal with a 4/3. You just have to deal with a 4/3, right?
You can't give them 2 landers.
I don't think you can give them 2 landers. It's a 3-for-1 if you give them 2 lander tokens.
Yeah, so I guess this is like, does this just read 2 mana 4/3?
Yes, I think so.
That's insane.
It's very powerful, yeah.
Okay. Then we have Unravel. It says one blue for an instant. It's an uncommon counter target spell. If the amount of mana spent to cast that spell was less than its mana value, you draw a card. So effectively, if this counters something that has been warped, you draw a card.
I'm kind of into this.
Of course you are. When was the last cancel that you were not into?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is good. I don't know. I just don't know how often warp is going to come up. You think warp's going to be, people
warp's going to be pretty good, right? I mean, it seems like centered in blue, certainly, and maybe blue white.
And you're trading, like, you're likely trading down on mana if you're countering something that's warped, but then you're up a card.
Up a card? That seems like a good trade off to me.
Yeah. I think this being an uncommon and not a common is interesting. Like, just in terms of, will it come up as much? Do we care about, often when we're looking at the evaluation of a counterspell, and this is fully from your mind palace of, like, do we have the triple threat of instant speed draw spell, instant speed counterspell, instant speed top or bottom spell? Remains to be seen if we have that sort of triumvirate of cards.
Yeah. If I have to pick greed or garbage, I'm coming out on the side of greed.
I'll say garbage just to be a good podcaster.
That's no fun. You can't couch it like that.
Okay. I don't like this card that much. I'm not a big fan of counterspells in limited generally, and I don't think that this bonus is that good enough. Like, if I compare it to, what was the counterspell we had in Bloomborough, was like, counter thing, draw a card, discard a card. That was awesome.
There we go. That's podcasting. That's what I'm talking about. That was good podcasting. You can't couch it in the, well, I'm going to pick the other side. Okay. Get out of here with that weak sauce.
All right. Thank you for the note. Next up, we have Systems Override, 2 and a red for a sorcery. Gain control of target artifact or creature until end of turn. I should note that this is uncommon. We have these active treason effects at uncommon. Gain control of target artifact or creature until end of turn. Untap that permanent. It gains haste until end of turn. If it's a spacecraft, put 10 charge counters on it. If you do, remove 10 charge counters from it at the beginning of the next end step.
I'm going to be so angry losing to this card when it steals my sweet spacecraft.
Well, but the other sick thing is, what, like, how mad are you going to be when you're like, I have dumped 6 of the 8. I've dumped 6 of the 8 power into this thing. I'm ready. And you go, systems override, steal it, crack in with it, sacrifice it to my black 2-drop.
Yeah, that's also going to be annoying. Steel and Sack definitely looks like it's here with the Bone Splinters variant as well. This looks like about as juiced up and homey of a home as we've seen for this effect in a while. Systems Override looks great to me.
Yes, I agree.
Ilvoy Galeblade is up next. This is blue for a 1/1 Jellyfish Warrior with Flash and Flying. And it's got 2, sacrifice this creature, draw a card.
So I'm in a little Discord group chat with the Mystical Dispute Boys, Garrett and Carl.
I thought I was getting an invite after Vegas.
You are not. I'm trying to save. You know what? I'm going to invite you. And we're going to see how long you last. That's what we're going to do. I'm going to call your bluff here. Anyway, so, and Garrett and Carl do not play Magic anymore. And Garrett posted this card in the chat. And he said, I guess we have to record a Mystical Dispute where I don't like this card and I'm wrong. No choice. And Carl said, it's basically cantrip lightning bolt with a free chump block. What's not to like? What do you think about that evaluation?
I am on the 2-duck cube side of card evaluations almost always in Mystical Dispute episodes. I'm in for lightning bolt their face, chump block, draw a card.
I mean, obviously that's extremely optimistic and hyperbolic, but it can be that. It can be one mana, crack in a few times, and then once the skies are not clear anymore, you get a little chump block. I think this card's good.
Yeah, this card, great is tough. But this card, like, if you have to pick great or garbage, this card is great.
I feel like as a phrase you like to use is a data darling. I think this is going to be a data darling. I think this
I'm
is
here for
be
it. I like the look of this card.
High in the win rate department, and I think
also usually we see the white commons previewed early. I feel like we've gotten a lot of juicy blue commons previewed early. I like blue's commons.
I agree. Yeah, we had way too many white cards previewed by the time we did this episode for the last set. Okay, here it is. Bygone Colossus. 9 mana, 9/9, uncommon artifact creature with warp 3. And apparently the on the preview stream, the inside scoop was that they called this the combo Colossus in testing because of, I assume, what it does with one shot stationing your spacecrafts.
This is still garbage, though, right? Like, this is still garbage, right?
Well, I think I'm gonna go great on this. I'm a believer.
You're a believer. So you're in for play my spacecraft, and then you're essentially playing this as a ritual, like 3 mana, turn target spacecraft online, and you think that's good enough because you're like, realistically, by the time this comes down to 9 mana 9/9, like, that you can dance in circles around that card in gameplay.
Well, but when it comes down as a 9 mana 9/9, it's going to station something else for sure.
You're excited about the all stations deck.
I'm not. So it just feels like the pieces are all there. So there's two worlds that we live in. I think there's the world where this card stinks and all the spacecraft stink. And there's the world where this card has a home and the spacecrafts have a home and those homes are together. And I just think it's so much more likely we live in the latter home than the latter world than the former world. Like, there's just no way design, like, that it gets through the design process of a year and they're like, well, we got this garbage card too that we're gonna put in the deck to trick all the people drafting the format. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And so it might be narrow, but I think this is gonna be good.
My feeling is I see the homes you're talking about. My feeling is that this is narrow enough that it is not good. I'm saying garbage.
Okay, and that is good podcasting.
All right. Virus Beetle, 1 and a black, 1/1 artifact creature insect. When it enters the battlefield, each opponent discards a card, great or garbage.
I'm waving the white flag here. I give up. This is the one I want to abstain. I don't want to weigh in after getting wreckedized by Hectize, which wasn't even that bad. It was still like a fine card, I guess. I don't know. I thought Hectize ended up being pretty bad.
But somehow I still owe you $20, which is horrible. So for those of you who are not listening to Lords Unlimited, we had a bet where I thought Black Mage's Rod was a lock to be higher in game and hand win rate than Hectize if we sorted by top players on 17 lands. Top players, you let me down.
Yeah. Well, it was the early returns were hot for Black Mage's Rod. And I will say, I feel like I won twice because I also got the tech of like Black Mage's Rod pretty dang good. I agree. I think it's definitely better than Hectize for my money. Virus Beetle. What do you do with this card in this format? So I think like the nod for Virus Beetle being good is that looks like, again, and this is probably just an evergreen sentiment for Limited now, every resource matters. Like, lands and spells are going to matter. Like, having to discard something in this format is not going to feel good. What do you do with the 1/1 body after that? I guess it's an artifact.
It's going to trigger Void, potentially. It's an artifact. We've already seen the Bone Splinters type card.
Okay.
I mean, like, you're going to be able to chump attack with it, or people, it's going to have that effect, right? Like with the ninjutsu, you're going to be able to chump attack. Like, are people really going to want to block? Because then you get a free Void trigger. Virus Beetle looks great to me from what I know about the context of the format so far.
I think, like, usually Ravenous Rats is great. And even Hectize was, air quotes, great, even if you and I did not particularly like it that much.
Yeah. Next up, the bestest boy, Chrome Companion, good half a doggo. 2 mana for a 2/1 artifact creature dog. Whenever this creature becomes tapped, you gain a life, and you can pay 2 mana, tap it, put target card from a graveyard on the bottom of its owner's library.
I say garbage to this card. I am usually a fan of that, the text that you just read, the loops text, certainly just having piloted an excellent Dovin's Acuity Clear the Mind deck in the Ravnica flashbacks. But
I thought you were going to talk about red-black Junk Troller Control. I was on mobile. I wanted to type you top decked a junk troller against your opponent's 5/5.
Yes.
And I was so close to having the message typed, but I was on mobile and it was gonna be on delay. Like, I called that junk troller shot in my head.
Oh, did you really when they played the 5/5?
You'd forgotten it was in your deck, and then you were like, ah, junk troller, my boy.
No, that was the first game, and I was like, well, junk troller belongs in my Rakdos aggro deck. Anyway, yes. I usually like that text, but I like that text, again, speaking of Junk Troller, which is an 06, I like that text on something that can help the game continue to go long.
Yeah, with a heftier bottom.
With its toughness, and the doggo does not have a hefty bottom here, so I'm out on the Chrome Companion.
I'm also out. Garbage for Chrome Companion. Cabaron Harrier is up next. This is red for a 2/1 uncommon artifact creature robot soldier. Whenever this creature attacks, you may pay 2. If you do, create a 2/2 colorless robot artifact creature token that's tapped and attacking. Sacrifice that token at the end of combat.
And this has to be great, right?
It has to be great? I think this is garbage.
No, I think this is great.
Why?
I guess I just think, like, on the play, you're cracking in for 4 on turn 2. Which is a lot.
But you're giving up playing a 2-drop that's going to be permanently around if you do that.
Sure. So I don't have to do it. I have the choice. If I have a 2-drop in my hand that I want to play, I'll play it. But like, this thing has a lot of damage. Plus, it's got types. Plus, like, triggers void. I guess it doesn't trigger void necessarily, right? Sacrifice it. Oh, no, at the end of combat. So it does trigger void. I don't know. I'm pretty into this card. It's hard for this to be bad when it's Savannah Lions with tons of upside and types.
But isn't Savannah Lions bad? We don't know that artifacts are going to matter for red.
We don't, but I'm gonna assume that they do.
You're just throwing out types like it's a fact. I don't know that we can assume that.
It has types. Whether types are relevant remains sure, to be seen.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, it's an artifact. I can't argue with that. Noted. Appreciate you. Appreciate you pointing that out with your card evaluation skill.
Objection overruled. Yeah. Yeah, you didn't know I could read that, but I did.
This looks incredibly low impact to me. This looks like it's going to get blanked at the first sign of a creature hitting the other side of the battlefield.
So the last time we saw a hyper aggro card like this that I poo-pooed was the one in Tarkir Dragonstorm, the single red 2/2 haste. That went back to your turn, back to your hand every turn.
Yeah.
And I was like, I see the joke about this triggering double spelling or whatever, and blah, or triggers flurry. That card was just great in Boros aggro decks. And I just trying to equate that to this. And like, I don't see the whole piece of the puzzle here, but I really underrated that card and it was way better than that. I think this is going to be good. The format has to be just so supremely slow and grindy for a card like this to be bad, I think. I think it has to be great.
That's a fair take. I'm still coming out on the side of garbage, but I think this is an interesting one to evaluate.
Okay, I agree. Next, we've got Virulent Silencer. 3 mana for a 2/3 artifact creature at uncommon. Whenever a non-token artifact creature you control deals combat damage to a player, that player gets 2 poison counters. So two things to note. One, this isn't whenever one or more. So if you're hitting them with 2 non-token artifact creatures in one combat, they're going to get 4 poison counters. And if you have multiples of this, it'll trigger multiple times.
Oof.
So you could get them up to 4 or 6 poison counters in one shot, potentially. Now, I don't know what the evasion life is on these artifacts yet, but they're more than just colorless, right? We just saw a red artifact. There'll be blue artifacts. There are black artifacts. Like
types. It's a red artifact.
Types, Cabaron baby. Harrier. I'm in for, I mean, this is build aroundy, but I'm in for great as a build around on Silencer.
Yes. But the thing that I wish, I'm also in for great on this card. What there needs to be an achievement for this. Like on Arena, and there's not gonna be. Like they need to use achievements the way we wanted to.
There is.
What for what? There's killing people with poison? Mm-hmm. But there needs to be like a virulent silencer specific one so that like you can make your gamer tag, I did the thing with virulent silencer, and people can know how sick your drafting skills are. Like, I want there to be more varied tags for more niche, like sideways build around achievements like this.
I totally agree. I think we need to give them a little bit. Also, yeah, I'm fully achievement pilled.
We got him.
Yeah, I'm fully in on achievements. The other day, I was playing my Acuity deck and I was at 49 life and I was like, oh my God, I have to cast Dovin's Acuity so I can get up to 50, past 50 life so I can finally get that white achievement.
That's so good that you know the achievement.
I know the ones that I have left. I do. So we're early days of the achievement list, and my hope is that we will eventually get, like, it doesn't have to be that many. Give us 5 limited achievements per format, and Watsy, we'll come up with them. You just ask us.
Just come
to me and Ben. We'll come up
with the gamer tag. Yes. But that's what it needs to be. It needs to be so that you can be Lord Tupperware, Poison Lord for the format, and the people know that man drafted a sick Virulent Silencer deck.
I totally
agree. Nothing would make me happier than that. Like, I don't need a trophy leaderboard. I don't need anything. Give me those type of achievements.
Next up is Hemasymbic Might. This is green for a 1/1 uncommon. When this creature becomes tapped, another target creature you control gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is this creature's power. And I guess we haven't talked about, you know, these cards that say whenever this creature becomes tapped, like the Chrome Companion had that text, right? That is in theory for stationing.
In theory for stationing, yeah. It also looks like green-white might be +1/+1 counters. We've seen some stuff that would indicate that. There's a rare that's been previewed. Like, there's several cards that do the plus, like that green warp card did the +1/+1 counters thing. So, I mean, Hemasymbic Might could get pretty out of control in a hurry if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, you know, if this gets a couple counters on it, it's attacking as a 3/3, it's giving something else +3/+3. That's nothing to be upset about, but I am dubious of this up front.
I think I'm going to go great on this and assume that it gets there.
I'm going to go garbage based on, I think, historically, green-white +1/+1 counters does not get there, but it could. It has, it can. Conclave Mentor would say it can, and so sometimes it does, but I think most often it does not.
I agree. If we're talking about it as an archetype, probably not, which probably means this doesn't, but I don't know. This card looks like it has potential to me, I guess is what I will say.
For sure.
Next up, we've got Harmonious Grove Strider. This is 3GG for a star with Ward 2. This creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of lands you control.
This is what I'm talking about with my, like, one-shot station cards.
Except it doesn't have warp.
No, it doesn't need to have warp.
It doesn't need to have warp because it's just going to be huge.
It's just going to be huge. Like, you get a lander token in there, then it's a 5-mana 6/6. But even, like, a lot of times, like, play a station on a spacecraft with station on 4 or 3 or whatever, and this comes down on 5 and says, boom, immediately it's a creature.
So far we've seen a lot of Grixis spacecraft. Do you think we're going to get green spacecraft?
Oh, I don't know. I guess maybe not, because, like, it's not quite flavorful. But you can pair your green cards with some Grixis cards and get some spacecrafts. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is... Ward 2 on these big dumb creatures is often more annoying than I think it will be.
That's what I think. I think this card's going to be huge, and I think it's going to be a problem when it hits the battlefield.
It's like your Grov kill is going to cost 6 to kill this. And that's you're probably going to need something like that, something that's catch-all. I mean, another boon for the Bone Splinters variant is that it gets around Ward, but then you're only paying 3, etc. I'm going to go great on Harmonious Grove Strider.
I'm going great on Harmonious Grove Strider also.
All right, rounding out the list is Pulsar Squadron Ace. This is 1W for a 1/2 human pilot uncommon. When this creature enters, look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal a spacecraft card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom in a random order. If you didn't put a card into your hand this way, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. So you got to chalk your deck with about 8 spacecrafts to reliably hit this on average. What do you think?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
I'm but the buyout way out on this card.
2-mana 2/3 with a counter, which might be synergistic. And if you buy now, I will give you an additional 20% off the price.
If green white counters as a deck, I'm sold. I'll buy now.
Like, just if that's a good deck, you mean, or if that's what it's trying to do?
If that's a good deck.
Yeah. So you're more interested in this as 2-mana 1/2 with a counter than you are as
Kujar Seedling or whatever the card is.
Kujar Seed Sculptor. Yeah. I think I'm with you. I still feel like, I don't know, maybe in my combo Colossus deck where I scoop up all the Colossi on the wheel and just, I think that's a deck. Here's what I'm going to do. While everybody's doing whatever blue nonsense there is, I'm going to be scooping up the Pulsar Squadron Aces, the combo Colossi, and 10 spacecraft.
Mardu spacecraft.
Mardu spacecraft. Let's go. I'm going great on the Squadron Ace.
I'm going to stay garbage still.
The set is really exciting to me because of the, like, I feel like I had a sense, and maybe I was too high on Job Select, but I had a sense of what the mechanics in Final Fantasy
we're going to do and be. There's a lot of unknown here. We're going into space. We're exploring the unknown.
That's true. Yeah. To go where no man has gone before. Like, even in Aether Drift, and we were higher on Start Your Engines than most, but that mechanic, like, once you sort of talked to me about your thoughts about it, I was like, oh, I see this mechanic, how it's going to play out. And it played out that way. I don't quite see that yet for Warp and Station in this format. Which is exciting.
Warp, you know how it's going to play out. Like, are you talking about warp in tandem with spacecraft and stations?
I think warp in tandem with spacecraft and stations. Well, and also, like, you know, you and I just made a bet about Starbreach Whale versus Mechanozoa, like, because we have different evaluations of how those cards are going to impact the game based on them having warp. So, like, they're tough mechanics to evaluate, I think.
Yeah, but I think that's more a function of me just, I feel like I know how both cards are going to play out. I just am pretty confident that Mechanozoa is going to be better. I knew you were going to hate that so much. I can't help it. That's how I feel.
Well, I would never want you to be anything other than honest with me on the podcast, so thank you.
And on that note, I think that's a good place to wrap things up unless you have any parting thoughts.
No. I'll see you in space.
All right. See you in outer space. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website, lordsoflimited.com. We've got our episode backlogs. We got links to our Patreon page. We've got our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively, all available on our website.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling Yuzu Mango IQ Mix Hydration Mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.